Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Welcome to RIP. Jordan Jensen in the studio in a new place. We're not in my apartment. This is not my apartment. You fuckers complained about the audio, complained about the cameras going off, complained about so much that I moved us into a fucking studio. So you better be happy, you little bitches. And I am what's it called when you pop the cherry of something when you on your marriage day where you have sex?
You pop the cherry.
Consummate. Oh. I'm coming all over this room.
I was like, you just said it.
Yeah, pop the cherry. I'm popping this cherry with the cherry popper of all poppers. Very excited for my guest today, which is Heather the Heat Hardy.
Hi.
I know you because, okay, so here's what happened. Synchronicity aligned us. Basically, I ran into Louis C.K., and he was like, I know this amazing lady, Heather. You should box with her. And then Sid, my trainer, was leaving town and was like, you should hit up Heather and box with her. And this was in 2 days. And I was like, well, I guess the world wants me to hit up Heather. And then I did. And it was like the best 3 days of training ever. It was so fun because you didn't, because I'm a pussy, because I'm so gun shy because I got the shit kicked out of me growing up. And which you also had, but you're reverse. You're like, I'll get in physical fights. Yesterday I got in a fight with a guy. I tried to get him to fight me because he almost ran over my dog. And I was smacking his window. I spit on his window. I was like, fuck you, you know. But then as soon as it comes, I'm like,
I was going to say, you don't try. You either fight somebody or you don't. Yeah. Like, what happened?
Yeah. But when I was training with you, you were very like, helping me be like, face me. You're fighting me. Mm-hmm. Don't flinch, don't, you know, and you're the most tenacious. I mean, I watched the last fight that you did with Amanda Serrano, and it was you literally have blood coming down your forehead and you're running up to the ref and be like, I'm totally fine. Your eyeball's hanging out. You're like, no, everything's great. Dabbing it up and then going and fighting again. So I'm very inspired by you as a little scared as a person who's trying to learn how to not be a turtle, but more be a tiger who can protect that himself.
Yeah, you're just like me.
Yeah, you think?
You're just like me.
You think so? That's very flattering. I like that.
Because to me, you think I'm so wild. Like the thought of standing up and telling jokes in front of people is like a firing squad. You're going up there. No, you can't see anyone's face. And you have the spotlight on you. And at any minute, they can just ruin your day.
Yeah,
right?
They do.
You're
they
like, hey, I'm going to give you 1,000 chances. That is wild to me. That is brave to me.
That's a very good point. Yeah, I never think of it like that. I forget that that's like bravery. But I think I've been doing it since I was so young that it's like that's always been my defense mechanism.
Well, it's like getting beat up.
Yeah, it's like getting beat up.
I've been getting beat up so long. It's like I'm a world champion at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. When a man, they were like, you're going to fight Amanda Serrano? I'm like... Sure.
Yeah, of course.
I'm a world champion to get beat up. There's nobody I can't fight.
So what, when, so you did, what was the progression of things? You did, you took a class is what you told me.
Yeah.
Just to, going through a divorce.
I was going through a divorce and I was living with my sister. And so we were two single moms with no child support. And she was like the mom and I was working six jobs. And she got me a gift certificate to like a little karate studio. And I did like the little fun classes. And like 3 weeks later, the girl like had a fallout on the fight team. I was like, do you want to do it? And man, if I didn't have nothing else to do, I was like, all right. So I did an amateur kickboxing fight with 3 weeks of cardio kickboxing experience. And I beat the shit out
really?
Of this girl. Because when I went to get in the ring, my cousin told me, right before I got in, they grabbed the back of my headgear. And he said, I want you to act like when that bell rings, they dropped a tiger in front of you. And then he just threw me in. And I ain't never fought different a day in my life. Like if it was a tiger. Because always, it was never like I walked in the gym like because I thought boxing was beautiful, right? I never thought boxing was a way to get out my aggression or an outlet. I fell over a job. And I put my whole heart into, I'm going to take my baby and I'm going to run towards the middle class as fast as I can.
Oh,
because boxing's going to take me.
So that was, so the class you were like, I have a daughter, the dad's out of the picture, I'm good at this after that first fight, and now I can use this to survive.
It was the first time I ever felt like I was good enough at something that I could take it to the top. I can remember being a little fat girl trying to do a handstand on my mama's, but you know, thinking maybe I could be in the Olympics. Like, no, you fat bitch, get down. And then I found kickboxing. I was like, all right, I'll try. And I beat the shit out of this girl. And she was like some sensei with a karate gym. And I remember, when I had 3 weeks experience, I remember my mother saying to me, like, if that bitch stole your wallet in the street, you care what she owns? And it was like,
wow.
No, I don't.
So you just went at her? Like, you just went full force. Mm. Wow. Yeah.
But I mean, that's been every fight, right? Like, they dropped a line in there. Like, it was my daughter's future or your daughter's future. That's how I fought every fight.
That's amazing. Yeah, it was never like... And do you feel like there are some boxers out there that are very much like, this is a dance and a...
Of course. I mean, as a trainer, everyone takes boxing different. Boxing saves more lives than it takes. And everyone, like therapeutically anyway, some people just like it for the exercise. It makes them feel powerful, makes them feel confident. And that's women and men. I have like geeky little guys who work desk jobs who come in and want to feel tough, you know?
Yeah.
And everybody gets something different out of boxing. And working at Gleason's, that's a beautiful part. I can give it out however I want.
Gleason's is where I trained with Sid and you. And it's literally plastered in giant banners that are like, Heather the Heat Hardy, that's your home.
Yeah, that's Bruce is like my dad, the owner.
I love that place. She's taken me to three different gyms, and that is by far the best.
That's the one you have to come back to.
It's so fun.
That's home.
I like it a lot. I mean, I started doing it for the exercise, and then I was like, today I was talking to Sid, and I was like, is there any way I can do the, what is it called, the fundraiser?
You want to do it?
What's the one that's...
If you're going to do a charity fight, then I have to coach you.
Okay.
Yeah, because like I'll be honest. Yeah, Sid, come at me, bitch.
Wait, what is it called though? Sid Haymakers.
If you're gonna do Haymakers, Sid can sit back chair. I have to be your coach for Haymakers.
I told you yesterday. I was like, what if you train me for an hour and then Sid trains me for an hour?
Yeah, that would be crazy yesterday. But if you're gonna do a fight, I implore you.
Be so
you're
fun.
My girl.
I will not say anything.
I'll tell
on
you
camera.
What. If you do a Haymakers fight, I'll do one of them stand up charity.
Really?
Yeah, I'll do one of those stand up things.
Oh my God, that's a deal. Let's do that. Really? Let's do it.
All right.
Oh my gosh, you have so much stand up you could talk about. And okay, let's go back. So wait, you growing up, it was you, your mom, solo.
No, it was me, my mom, and I never met my dad, and she got married, and then I had my brother and sister. So it's the five of us.
The five of you. So your stepdad is who you've
used? He's really my daddy. I never met my real dad.
And then, so you have him as your dad, and then the owner of Gleason's also feels like a father.
He was like my second dad, and Hector Rocco, who passed away, he was my boxing coach. I called him Papa, and he was my boxing coach, and when he passed away, I remember walking into Gleason's and seeing Bruce, and Bruce owns the gym. And every morning, swear to God, you know, I'm in there 13 years, you go in the gym before 7 a.m., Bruce is on the elliptical, the bike, checking people in from the bike. And I remember when Papa died, I got a call like 2 in the morning, and I had to go identify the body in the hospital. Like, I didn't even know that that's what kids do, because this real kids was not in the country.
Oh.
And when I came back to the gym, it was the first time I seen Bruce cry.
Oh.
Because for 46 years, imagine, every single morning, Rocco walked in and had coffee with him. And he said good morning to Hector every day for 46 years. And then he died, and me and Bruce made a promise that Papa was gone, but every morning I'm going to hug you, and that's going to be the new routine.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, so he goes to...
Which one is Bruce at Gleason's?
He's the owner. He's the one who sits at the in the office, the older guy.
Oh, yeah.
And made that promise, and now he goes to, like, his other second home in another state, like, once a month, and he'll write me, I miss my morning hugs.
Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah. So that is your home. It really feels, like the safest space. Yeah. So then... How did you get from doing a fight against the sensei lady to having like a coach? Because you said that, you said Hector is his name? You said he wasn't even a boxing, he was a cyclist.
No, he was an Olympic cyclist. The kickboxing fight was from a little karate dojo, and I trained there for like about a year. I had like 13 amateur fights in a year, and I lost my last fight, and I lost against a boxer. And I went in there like I was going to kill her, and she just, pop. I was like, yo, this ain't for real. Like, first of all, let's see where she lives. But second, you know, and then I went to Gleason's, started to learn the sport of boxing, and then realized how kickboxing, they didn't really have room to grow. But when I thought of like all these girls at Gleason's who were world champions and working full time and doing this, it was like, okay, I'm good at this and I can be it, you know. Make it my job.
So that girl beating you, you were like, I need to do that.
I got to figure this out because I knew I was good. I was too good at it for it not to be the thing. Like I always felt, like I said, I was a fat girl trying to do handstands in my mom's fucking flower pots. Like I always felt like I was going to be great at something.
Yeah.
Like as if I was, you know, born in the wrong time. I should have been burning my bra in the 70s or something.
Yeah.
I always felt that. And then I found boxing. It was like, bet.
Yeah. I feel the same way about stand-up. And I also feel the same way where as soon as somebody beats me at it, it was never like, I shouldn't do this. It was like, I have to get better.
It's like,
yeah. I mean, I remember talking to Louie about it once and being like, I all I want is to be close to how good you are. Like I will just tooth and nail until I get there. And it is like, yeah, it is. It's the best feeling in the world to know what you want and to know that you can get there.
Yes.
And then, okay, so now you said to me the other day, I was like, because you said you can't do it right now because you have brain trauma. And I was like, what is that like? And you said, it's like if you couldn't do stand-up, right? Mm-hmm. And there was a part of me, I was thinking about that, and I was like, there is a part of me that if I couldn't do stand-up and had become the world champion at it, that would be a little, like, is there a peacefulness also to knowing that you got here and now you can rest?
I wish there was, you know, like I was the first female to do all sorts of stuff in boxing. I became a world champion on HBO at Madison Square Garden, but I made $20,000. On a fight that probably cost me double that. So my whole career, while I was screaming at the top of my lungs for equal pay, I was doing all sorts of things that no woman ever did before. So while you have these girls, I never quite did break into the mainstream, which is why most of your fans will be like, who's that bitch, you know? But when it comes to...
I don't think any of them are in the mainstream, any female boxers.
They might be like, oh, I know her.
It's the one guy, it's the redheaded guy. What's his name? What's that guy's name? Sean.
Canelo.
No. Mm. Redheaded guy who's MMA. Who's in a movie. He's like the Irish guy or whatever.
Oh, Conor McGregor.
Yes.
He doesn't even have red hair. He's just Irish.
He's just Irish. I'm picturing a small leprechaun.
He's not even
I'm literally
small.
Picturing a green man.
It was a good try.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I got it.
That's it. That's all. That's mainstream.
I got him. Yeah, but it was like I did all this shit and then, you know.
And no, and you were talking to me about it and you were like, okay, so you did the MSG and then is MSG the one that you did where you did it in front of no one that you were telling me about?
So the fight that made me go to MMA, I was sponsored by Dymatize, a big protein company, and it was like the first time that a female boxer, whatever, I was at the Barclays Center, and I was defending my WBC title, and I had sold $36,000 in tickets, which is roughly like 200 people. And when I say I sold them, it's not like now on Instagram you put up the link. Like, I used to do my jogs to hit up Barry, the VP at Barclays, and I'd sit in his office and we'd pick out seats for these people. And I would get the tickets and run back and hand them out. So when I say I sold 35,000 tickets, I hand delivered seats to over 200 people.
Wow.
And there was a small lineup and I was fighting to get on. I think it was the Sean Porter card maybe, and I was fighting to get on the TV pot, and they pushed me to before the doors open. And I remember I heard, you know, this girl is on fire, and I walked out, and not one person was there clapping. And I was just like, oh my God. So now, not only do I have to defend my WBC title, I'm thinking of my mom, like on the, listening to the music and not being able to get inside. My grandma flew in for the fight. You know, I have Dymatize walking behind me just appalled that they sponsored me for this fight, for this Barclays Center fight, and no fans were there. Like, they dropped me immediately.
They did?
Yeah.
So how did that happen?
Immediately.
Why did they?
Because apparently there wasn't enough airtime for the female fight to go on before whatever the television show was. And then they had this kid who was getting signed with Mayweather Promotions. And he only had like two fights at the time. But like the money team came in to see him and they were like, well, we're not going to put him last. We have to put you before. And it was just like, my mom, but I sold all these tickets. Like you know, and when you think of it in terms of I sold $35,000 in tickets, I think I made $7,000 for that fight. And when you think of how much work I had to run and pick out the seats and sell the tickets and, you know, make the weight and win the fight, so much work that now that I have brain damage, shouldn't I have health insurance?
Yeah.
Shouldn't I have been able to make enough money to at least buy a house? You know, I want to be one of those stories where people are like, man, let that bitch cry from her mansion. She knew what she was getting into. But, like, I always had this thought, and I'm sure you can relate, because when you chase your dreams, you just don't care.
Yeah.
You don't care. You know, you trample the weak, you hurdle the dead.
Yeah.
And that's what I was doing, thinking, no, it's got to answer. There's got to be an end, you know? And I just kept on running.
And you kept going thinking that if you kept fighting, kept winning, eventually you would get to a point. Like, does Serrano make epic amounts of money?
Yeah. I mean, she's probably, I don't want to say who the highest paid female is, because I'd be like, no, bitch, I make more money than her. I don't know who makes the most amount of money. But there's a handful of girls making, you know, six,
and there's
seven
a lot
figures.
More men making a lot more.
Oh, bitch, what?
Yeah.
What? I think I made when I, for the triple header on HBO, I remember, like, this is a very true story. They were advertising as a triple header on HBO, but they refused to televise mine and Shelly's fight. But every time they had press for it, they wanted me and Shelly to do all the press because we were the ticket sellers. Imagine. They didn't want an empty stadium when the cameras were on their main event. So they needed us to fill in the seats.
Oh.
But they was like, nah, we're not putting you on TV. So I got drunk one night. I called my friend. I got Peter Nelson's cell phone number. He was the vice president at HBO Sports. And I called him and just like, I can't believe this. I met you at Lou's Christmas party. But I don't even know what I said, but I'm going to work the next day. And Louis DiPaolo was like, did you call Peter Nelson? I was like, oh, shit. And he said yes and put us on. And then,
oh my God,
I know. But wow. Lou was like, they'll put you on, but they're not going to give you no money.
Oh, so you're on it, but no pay.
And I mean, that's a question of whether HBO paid the promoter and the promoter didn't pay me.
Yeah.
Or maybe HBO didn't pay the promoter and didn't want the stress. I highly doubt they didn't pay anything. But at the end of the day, me and Shelly sold two fights, not just that one at the Garden. The same thing happened the first one on NBC. Like, we were the first female fight televised in a while, and we made it to NBC Sports, and it was, like, right after the Olympics or some shit, and The main event was like a big premiere fight. And it was the same thing. They made us fight after the main event. So our fans didn't leave.
Oh. Yeah.
So when
because
the
you're the one doing
on,
the work to get them there. Yeah, yeah. This is what we call bringer shows in comedy.
Yeah.
Where they go, you can perform here, but you have to bring 10 of your friends.
Which is fine in comedy, right? It's like prove yourself and you can get your way up.
Yeah.
Which is fine in boxing too. It makes sense. But I became the first lady for too much shit to be walking around brain damage with no health insurance. For
right.
Me, like screaming for equal pay. Like, you know, this is why I put, you know, and people could say, well, you signed the contracts. You did that. Does that make my skin any less likely to bleed or
right.
bruise? Make it harder for me or easier to get to work?
So then you fought. What was the fight with Everlast that happened?
It wasn't even really a fight. It was just really disappointing. I mean, I was like, you know, Women's History Month, always Heather the Heat. And they had me signed for a while. And then after I lost to Amanda, I stopped getting my checks. I was calling them like, did you guys drop me? You know, what's going on? And I had wondered if they thought I retired. And I finally got through to them. And they were like, oh, I'm sorry. We're going to focus now on our younger up and coming talent. Which is like balls, you
this
know?
This all happens, you know, in comedy, too. It's crazy.
But at the same time, you can't hate it. It's life, right? It's like shit happens, whatever. But then, like, when I got the brain damage and I was like, guys, I need work. I don't know. Like, I was panicked. I was like, please don't leave me. Like, you don't understand how hard business is. Like I went to them begging and they were like, all right, here's 3 pairs of boxing gloves. We're going to hire you to be the product tester. Don't worry about it. When money, you know, we'll figure it out later down the line, maybe a podcast. Just take these gloves back to the gym and we'll call you. We'll set up the payroll again. And that was February and they never called me back. Even after like all this shit with, you know, my head and the reports, it's like.
Because they were sponsoring you for the Serrano fight?
Yeah, they were sponsoring me for 4 years before the Serrano fight. They just dropped me at that fight. Which is like, okay, because you always have that in your contract if you lose. You run the risk of getting dropped from everyone.
I mean, this happens. It reminds me of, I mean, it's like in comedy, we always talk about how it's crazy that there's no HR, there's no health insurance, and you can work a club for 8 years and then all of a sudden be dropped, even though it's been your like income the entire time. And it's a crazy gamble and there's no, and the other thing is if you're coming from like, especially probably we both have this in common, like I didn't have family that was like, you need to secure this amount of money in order for your view. Like there was none of that. So it's like, and I think a lot of artists are, I was talking to DiStefano, who you know about this the other day, and he was like, I had no idea like how to buy a house or keep money or, you know, save money for this. And he like had to teach himself. And now he's like the expert to his family on it, you know? And I think it's almost like, it's like we took this crazy gamble where it was like, I'm going to do the thing that I love as long as I possibly can. And I'm gambling my entire sense of security in the future.
Well, for sure. And I mean, in something like comedy, it's like, let's just say, God forbid, just like what happened to me, God forbid I can't fight anymore. I don't expect all my fans who bought tickets over the years to pay for me because it's a crazy gamble. But you would think, like morally, I don't know if you've had people in your career who you've really gone out on a limb for. Like, when I think of me getting brain damage, it's more like, bitch, we got brain damage.
Yeah, totally.
You know, like, when I look at my promoter, you know, and promoters are big on that. You sign the contracts. I have no liability. I warned you. But at the end of the day, like, bro, how many women did you sign that I introduced you to and you can't pay my Uber to and from work because I can't see to get on the train? Like, nah.
Yeah.
I had a manager call me to tell me like, oh, you know, I'm really like a big member of Safe Sport and all these like, you know, organizations and stuff. And I have to publicly say that I told you, I warned you that this might happen. So no, I don't support this campaign of yours. And I had to hang up the phone and block his ass like, yo, this shit ain't a campaign. This shit is my life.
Yeah.
Fuck you mean a campaign?
Yeah, it all comes
like,
down
I'm
to
sorry,
no humanity.
You know?
Yeah.
Right. Like I'm sorry this shit make you feel bad, but everybody was like, women's boxing don't sell. And took them $40,000 every time I handed them ticket money. Like, bitch, I need help now.
Yeah.
Like an electric bicycle or something.
Yeah. And it is... it is also crazy to have. I mean, I think about like the agents and the managers and stuff, like the relationships that you have with people. Like you're like, this isn't like you talking to Everlast. This is like, you know, the people on the phone, you talk to them, they've communicated with you before. And then as soon as the business side of it starts to, it is crazy how fast they can just hide behind any sort of.
And what's so alarming is like, when you think of it, it's like, oh, it's boxing. But after the whole thing with the brain damage, and I look at the footage, like people really been kicking me and punching me and picking me up and throwing my body on the ground, smashing me, like, you know?
Yeah.
And then I'm not the only one who like made money off that. Like, y'all made a lot of money off that. You tried to make me feel like you weren't making money.
Right, the whole time they're saying you're not making any money. Yeah, women's boxing be lucky doesn't sell.
Yeah, like, all right, bro, like I'm literally selling it every time. I'm not even that good, and I'm selling it. Give me a break.
And then the whole time you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. Like you're like taking this money, helping your kid get through.
Oh, that's all I was
going like to the next fight.
I took Annie. I grew up in Garrison Beach, and I remember coming home from work one day, like a long day of work. And my kid was sitting with my nephew doing homework on a pizza box. And I was like, oh, no, 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 no.
Yeah.
And then I had to think about how much money I spent on that rent and, you know, keeping her private school and the tutor and all this stuff. And I just took her and I hopped the fence over in Dumbo. And I was like, baby, you're going to run and I'm going to stay right here. And that's what I did. I just, you know, paid money in the tuition, but it was like she did every after school activity, like cooking, I mean, art, dance. She did everything because she hated sports. So I put her in everything. I used to send her all over concerts. She went everywhere because it was just like, you live this life. You know? So when I fought Amanda, I thought, now I can put some money down on a property, start to enjoy my life. Next year will be my last year fighting. And then I got hurt. And it was like, you know, everyone said, well, you made a lot of money with Amanda. But imagine, I had a kid in college. That shit is not cheap.
Yeah.
And I was like faking my life. I was living in Dumbo, but just waiting for a paycheck to clear money up. So even when Louis sponsored me for that fight, he sponsored me so I didn't have to work my full-time job.
Right.
It didn't even clear up no debt, no bills, no nothing. It was just like, all right, Louis isn't going to give me money, so I don't have to work for the first time.
Louis gave you money for the Serrano fight to train.
He gave me money so that I didn't have to work my full-time job.
Because you were going to work and train? Were you going to do the fight no matter what? That's what I did my
whole career.
Oh.
Louis gave me money for the Amanda fight, and it was the first time in my whole career that I didn't have to work and fight.
What was your full-time job?
Training people at Gleason.
Oh, okay.
I would do a full day training clients and then quick put on my clothes and work out with the trainer and then do the sparring and conditioning and all that other shit.
And then, so Louis gave you money. Now I want, do you wish that you hadn't done the fight with Serrano?
No, there's no way. Would say if my mother had balls, she'd be my father. You know what I mean? Like, if, no. That was, like I said, and the guy, the manager, I told you, are you willing to lose your sight in this bare knuckle fight for Annie? Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I would have.
And your sight split, right? You said it split?
Split and double and blurry.
And then your brain started like dealing with it? Your brain was like, all right, we can deal with this.
Yeah, like after it happened, I was like, this is normal. And then like after a couple months, it was just like a new normal kind of thing. And that's what happens when you have shit with your brain. Like all of a sudden you're like, why is there a shower curtain right there? You know?
Hanging in the middle of the room.
Literally. Yeah, I'm going to send you a photo because I have them in my house. And I'm still like, why? You know? The shit happens with your brain. So, like, people like that know you your whole life looking at you like, what's the matter with you?
Were you, like, manic from it?
Beyond. Like, really? I think that it, like, sent me back to my childhood. I don't know. But I was
a crazy person.
An emotional person. Like they say with CTE, everyone was like so worried. They were like, are you getting like unreasonably angry? And I'm like, I am a 42-year-old woman whose boyfriend just cheated on her. Like there is no unreasonably angry, right? Yeah. Like, what do you mean? But after like a couple months, I realized like I found a depression that I never even knew existed.
Really?
I mean, I had...
He cheated on you while you had brain damage?
I never proved. I mean, that was just like a listening.
You felt it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, did you know, cheated, we get to decide what cheated on means.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, the emotional affairs, whatever it
is. Like,
yeah.
I never slept with anyone. You don't have to. Yeah. I decide what cheated on means, and you cheated on me.
Yeah, totally.
That's how I feel. How dare you tell me you didn't?
Yeah. Well, also, it's like, I mean, yeah, my mom is like she loves cheating. And her getting away with cheating is so, I mean, she's like, I did not sleep with that woman. And I'm like, I think, yeah, but you spent every day with her and bought her dinner and snuggled on the couch and read books together. That's worse than fucking. I would have preferred that you fucked that lady.
And at that point, it's like, that is my definition of cheating. So congratulations. I'm sorry to report. You did.
Yeah.
You did.
So then, okay. So then you got, and then how did you get your vision? Did you find a good doctor that you went to?
I called the New York Athletic Commission and just like bawled my eyes out. Like, it's hard being a world champion, having to say I need help. Like, after the bare knuckle fight, having to go to Bruce and say I'm too weak to fight. You know me for 2 weeks. Could you imagine me saying like I'm 2 weeks to do something? Yeah. It was so fucking hard to say I couldn't do it.
To say you couldn't do the bare knuckle fight, I can't. There's no way there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And then you brought yourself to a doctor.
To the doctors who were eventually like, Heather, didn't I say you shouldn't get hit until your vision clears up? And like, I was like, oh yeah, my vision didn't clear up yet. Like, I didn't even realize.
Why a bare knuckle fight? Pays well?
Well, I needed to get some money for the first quarter because after the Amanda fight, I was so sick and confused and like not sleeping and nauseous and throwing up. I was taking a ton of time off of work. I would get to pay for a cab to get to work and be like bumping into stuff and black and blued from falling. And like my clients would be like, baby, go home. And then I would pay the money to go home. And then a week would go by and I'd have, you know, money out, no money in. And this was happening when I wasn't really taking track of stuff. And it just kind of like fell on me, like, oh my God.
And then you were like, if I do the bare knuckle fight, I'll make money.
Yeah.
And
it was like, I'll.
How much could you make off it?
I think it was a $50,000 fight.
50. 50. 50.
To
okay.
fight Christine Ferreira.
With no gloves on?
No. And she's like a fucking animal. And I was like losing weight. And they were like, can you do the fight at 135? And I was like 117 pounds. I was like clinking around. And, it was like a month away from the fight, and I had went in for a sparring session, and I didn't know it at the time, but there was swelling around my optic nerve, so that's why every time I would get hit or run or do anything crazy, my vision went. And after the sparring session, I couldn't see for it was a Friday, I couldn't see until I woke up on Monday. It was just shadows. Like, usually I would and then come back, but I had a whole weekend where I thought maybe I wasn't going to be able to see again.
Were you panicking? What did you do?
I didn't eat or sleep or tell anybody. I just sat in my house wondering if I was going to fight or if I was going to tell them that I wasn't going to fight. And I walked into the gym like, you know, like there was Bruce was like, get in here right now. And I was like, I told him what happened. And he's like, yeah, we're not doing this.
And then as soon as the swelling goes down in your brain, it starts to clear up.
Yeah. I mean, it hasn't cleared up totally. Like, we're finding at first they were like, don't get hit. And they were like, okay, no more running or jumping rope because you can't, like, shake your brain. And then they were like, all right, you know, no more strenuous exercise, no weight training because – but then I can't even get mad no more. My heart rate goes up and I start getting dizzy and nauseous. I'll pass out. One time I had an argument on the phone and, like, dropped the phone and hit the floor just, like, shaking.
Whoa.
And I wasn't unconscious or nothing because I remember being like, bitch, get up. You know, but I couldn't. I couldn't get up. And
so now your whole job is to be chill.
Imagine.
And relax.
I smoke a lot of weed.
Yeah, yeah. And you sit on your balcony.
I sit on my balcony. I'm like wondering if it's smarter because the problem is like getting to work. I moved far away when my daughter went to college and now it's like, you know, I need a dog and a stick. I don't know how to get there anymore. I can't jog. I can't ride a bike, you know, so I'm.
To get to Gleason's is a hike.
Yeah.
Yeah. Damn. And then why do you live so far? Why can't you live near it?
Because you got to be like a fucking millionaire.
Dude, Dumbo's so crazy.
This apartment, this room would cost you $6,500 if it had a window.
It's crazy.
It was bananas.
Yeah. It's so nice, though, down there. It's crazy.
I lived there for a while with Annie. But because when you live there, the zip code put you in the best public schools in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So instead of living in the hood in Garrison Beach and then paying for private school, it was like, well, I'll just live here. She'll go to school there, and I get to raise her because we're right around from the gym. So right. That was the life my kid got.
And then when she left, you ran out of money, had to move back.
Yeah, because SUNY Albany was like, nah, 11201, don't cover it up here.
Oh,
they
yeah.
They wasn't giving me no free tuition.
I know. I remember being in college and just me, my dad, and mom all scraping together money just to get it done, which is so fucked up. I mean, it's crazy.
I know.
It's and it's so, the whole idea is, and the fights that we'd have to go through, and like sitting down with the financial aid officer, I remember sitting with that bitch so much, and her just being so hardened and cold.
Because their job is to make you like, ugh, forget it.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
And they're like, ugh, you just get so tired of them.
Yeah. And going in there and being like, please unlock the hold on my classes so I can sign up. I will get you the money. I forgot about that. Going in day after day, just being like, I remember getting so mad, being like, it's a button that you push and then I will sign up for my classes and then I will get you the money by next week. And then being like, no, goodbye.
They
and you're
don't
like,
care. I told my daughter this year because she always be flaking on going to the financial aid office. I told her, like, there's one person in the room whose problem it isn't.
Yeah.
It's mine.
That's a good feeling. Because,
you know, it's going to be sad when they making that call to you. You're going to be like, Mom, be like, I can't hear you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Mom has got brain damage and she's not fighting anymore.
So fighting was the only, and you train, your training is, you now train for like 4 hours a day, right?
Yeah, I'm teaching clients. It's about 6 hours. I'll go in around 7 a.m, 6, 7, and I'll stay until like noon.
Yeah.
And I have like a roster of clients and take walk-ins at Gleason's and stuff. So send me your people.
Yeah.
And I'm really good.
She's really good. If you want to learn how to box or just be fit, we're going to put it in the description so they can hit you up.
Yeah, because I really know a lot of stuff about boxing.
I'll be watching you.
One of these.
With fucking RIP fans being like, fuck you. Yeah, I mean, I learned so much in 3 days from working with you. It was so awesome. But yeah, it's idea of going into a fight. You went into this fight. Did you think when you were going to fight with Serrano, were you like, there's a possibility I get my shit rocked in here?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There was no chance I was getting knocked out.
Not get knocked out. It was crazy.
Yeah, you know, like everybody. And I'm sure there had to be a wonder if Amanda had to be like, you know, I didn't get that bitch in the first time I won. You know?
Yeah.
We're very good friends, though, so she would never talk about me like that. But I did wonder. Like, she hits hard.
Yeah.
I mean, she hits hard, and it was 10 rounds, and I was thinking, but, you know, I'm a fighter. There's always a chance when you're in there.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, maybe she sneezed, like, caught a hook, and...
I know that was the announcers the whole time were being like, this is, Heather is so resilient. This is unbelievable. And then, did the referee want to call it? It looked like a few times the referee was like, we should stop. And you're like, no way.
Yeah. I always have a talk with the refs before the fight, like one of these.
Yeah.
Like, I know you're going to want to because I'm a girl, but don't you do it.
Yeah. Don't call it.
Don't you do it.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, I like to think that in my first fight with Amanda, I think it was Harvey Dock was the ref. I like to think it was that talk after because he came in after, dapped me up like, I know you had it. I know you was 2 feet, 10 toes down.
Yeah. And she's tall, right? Isn't Serrano really tall?
A little bit taller. I mean, not really.
Because, yeah, I was surprised. Are you a featherweight?
Yeah.
You're featherweight.
I fought her at 125.
And then you were telling me about, because I watched some of the pre-show stuff where you would weigh in, your shorts hanging off you, scrawny.
Yeah.
And then you said, you told me you dehydrate yourself right before that.
Yeah.
You sweat it out, all the water out of your body. And then what you said that fucked me up is that if you didn't make weight at that point, you would spit.
Yeah.
To get all the moisture out, which is crazy.
Well, the idea is that your body holds extra water, and you only have to be that weight, fight weight, for a second. You get on the scale, 126.2. You get an OF, and then it's like Pedialyte Central, you know? They're putting the IV in you, you know?
Yeah.
And so most fighters do it. Even the most healthy fighters will tell you, oh, I can cut 15 in water. And the idea is that, you know, you don't drink like 30 hours before the weigh-in. You do plastics, Albaline, and you do, like, you know, every fighter has their little routine workout. I have my little gym sesh. I think that this fight with Amanda, I did like hill jogs and shadow boxing outside in Texas, like 100 degrees in the plastics, no food for 3 days. And then when there's no more sweat to get out, because you do get to that point, you'll be in the sauna and you just, no water coming out of you. Like, I can't remember fights in Equinox where my friends Grace and Jenny would do like whistle duty. Like, she'd been there 5 minutes and come in and pick me up and put me on the towels and wave me off. And there were Bellator fights where it was like, you know, running to the scale and people would be on the phone. Linda, can you get an IV bag here for Heather? Because I really feel like she's going to need one for tomorrow.
Really? Yeah. Because you were dying?
Yeah, and I mean, and at the end of the day, I'd be like, well, Heather, why didn't you fight at a bigger weight? And you had to go where the money is. I would have fought anybody. I would have fought anybody. I called out the 119, the 125, the 130, the 135. It was like, whoever will have me, that's what weight I'll fight at.
Oh,
so
shit.
I caught the money at 126, and it was like... You know, oh, I had to make that weight quick.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. So if a fight had been like 135, you would have just bulked up.
I would not even. I would have lost 10 pounds. I think I went in. I think I signed the Amanda contract. I was about 152.
152.
And it took me maybe a month and a half or 2 months to get down to 126.
But you're still training, right? You're still weightlifting.
Oh, my God. I'm training for fights. I mean, let's just say that a warm-up is a 4-mile run every day.
Oh, boy.
Every day.
4-mile run.
Yeah.
So you're building muscle, but you also are trying to lose weight.
Yeah, and I'm fighting. So I'm cutting this weight, and there's video footage of me. Because to train for Amanda, she's a lefty, southpaw.
Oh.
And she also hits like a man. Yeah. I've been in the ring with her. I've been hit by men and women. There are only two women who hit like men. Amanda Serrano and Chantel Cameron. Chantel Cameron hit me, and I said, give me the cell phone and call the fucking police. Because I don't know who let her in here. That bitch hit me like, fuck out of my face.
Which fight was that?
It wasn't a fight. It was a sparring session. Oh, if it was a fight, you'd probably remember it, because I probably would have taken off my shoe and didn't know what it was happening, because this girl hit me. I was like, damn.
And then what is that? What is the difference? They just throw their body, right?
No, man, I ain't never liked it in, but I don't want to say that. But when I say some people could just punch, it's like a God-given talent, I guess. You could teach people, put it on, but man, some people hit you and you just come out your shoes.
Yeah. Did you see the woman that they said was trans?
Which one?
In the Olympics?
I met her.
You did?
The nicest girl in the world.
Isn't that fucked up? I was like, just because...
People ask me, oh, what do you think about it? Why do you think I think about it? Yeah. Why would I think about that?
Yeah.
She's a beautiful woman. It's a horrible thing. I don't think about that.
Isn't that crazy, though, to just be like, you look masculine, therefore you are a man? It's so fucked up.
I mean, if you're honest, like, at first when I met the girl, I thought she was a boy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a bad thing to say.
No.
I said that to her face. I'm so, so sorry.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus, I thought you were Henry. She looked like my friend Henry.
Yeah.
But she's a girl. That's it's just so, a girl.
I know, who fights great.
Yeah, I mean, she beat the shit
that
out of everybody.
Was wild.
I remember asking my coach, could I? And he was like, nope.
Yeah.
No.
Because she is tall. She looks
huge.
Yeah,
I think she like a 165.
Yeah. And then that one woman you fought who has the short hair in the picture, what's her name?
Shelly.
Is that Shelly?
Shelly.
She
Vincent.
Looked out of your weight class. She looked way
the
heavier
one with
than
the spiky
you.
Hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we were the same weight. What? She just is 5 feet tall. She's shorty.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you want to get shorter?
Maybe.
You want to get shorter so you can keep them away.
Oh, but when you're tall, you'd be like, bitch, my arms are longer than yours.
Yeah.
Just try to get you.
Yeah. That's what I want to do. I want to drop a bunch of weight and just fight somebody really small to just go like this.
You're still 12 feet height. You can still fight someone smaller your weight.
Yeah. So then you drop all that weight, and then you said you immediately, the best thing in the entire world is Pedialyte.
Oh, yeah.
The first cold drop.
Pedialyte Colada, the best.
And then And then you were like, I was like, oh, so then you binge eat, but you're like, you can't binge eat because you fight the next day.
You have like 30 hours. And then also your stomach is so small because you've just lost, I've just lost like 30 pounds, 10 of it water weight or whatever. And then you're used to working out for like these 5 hour sessions and then eating 4 ounces of fish and 2 pieces of fucking potato.
Yeah.
So it's like you go and you're like, I want a burger. And then you eat 2 bites and you're like,
yeah.
So every couple hours, you're putting in a little bit of protein, crackers, you know.
And what do you do now? What do you, how do you just eat whatever you want now? Or are you still very strict with yourself?
When God gave me the brain damage, he was like, here are like 30 bad things that's going to happen to you, but you're skinny now.
Really?
Yeah, he just made me skinny.
Okay, really? So since.
I don't know what happened.
Get the fuck out of here.
I swear to God. I swear to God.
You can eat what you want and you just stay skinny even though you're a fat kid?
I don't even like to eat anymore. I'm one of those awful people now who goes, oh my God, I'm so sick. Oh shit, I didn't eat today.
That is a gift from God.
I know. You want to know what else?
What?
I'll tell you something else. Favorite food in the world, a bagel with cream cheese. They taste like scrambled eggs now.
Let's go. That's amazing.
I put it in my mouth and it was like a mouthful of scrambled eggs with cream cheese on it. And I was like,
oh my God, give me brain damage today.
Want one more?
Yeah.
Pizza.
Pizza's my favorite food. Stop it. What does it taste like?
We'll do a couple rounds tomorrow.
Yeah. Knock that shit out of me.
I'm telling you, I'll be chewing the shit like, I don't know what the hype is no more. I'm telling you.
Oh my
you.
God.
Yep. Tacos.
Make cake taste bad.
Yep. Cake, sugar, forget it. I am one of those people now who will eat a Little Debbie and be like, oh, the amount of sugar in these things.
Wow. That's
incredible. I've been a fat girl my whole life.
Oh my God. That's all I want is to hate food.
Gotcha. Who's the best trainer in New York?
Yeah, yeah. Just punch my face in. Wait, so what do you eat? What do you like?
Christ, if I know. Yeah. My favorite thing, and I bet you know this dude, this is my favorite comedy skit ever.
Yeah?
I think his name is Brett something. And he's an Instagram guy, but he does a skit about happy hour. And he was like, there's something about when that fucking wine hits the bottle at 5 p.m. Or like your friends come in with mimosas and it's bottomless brunch. That video hit my soul.
Really? Like, so you're a happy hour girl.
I am a happy hour. I am a brunch. I am a cocktail friends over. And then the saddest thing in the world, I got brain damage and I just will sit there and some days I would just cry. Like my favorite.
If you drank?
No, just not wanting to do it anymore.
Yeah.
Imagine something you love so much that you hate that you love it, and then you can't do it anymore.
Right.
Like.
So you don't drink?
Oh, I drink, but I mean.
Not.
But it's like, you know, I'm like New York sober. I do it at like necessity.
Yeah.
It's not a fun social thing anymore.
So what is the thing now that you do that brings you joy?
Smoke weed on the balcony in the sun.
Yeah.
Because I can't do anything else, right?
Yeah.
It's like, hey, you want to go? It's like, oh, Heather, you should jog. Can't
you can do stationary bike, you can't read very well, or no, you can't do TV very
no,
well.
No, I can't read or TV do TV well. I can, it's not like I can't, it's not like I can't see it, like I don't really need a dog and
right.
stick, but the shit
is just irritating.
It get like after a while it's like I'm watching Veep and there's like four you know what's her names,
yeah,
like come on, I'm not doing this shit.
Yeah, so
listen
then
to the radio.
Do you have pets?
No, not allowed. The apartment.
I tell you what, I have a service dog. And it's really, it would be so easy for you to get a service dog and it's changed my entire life. And she's the love of my whole life. And she makes everything good.
That's the most positive piece of advice I got today.
It's unbelievable.
I know that. The unconditional love that you get from a pet.
Yeah. She rules. And I'm like, I feel like for years, I was like, fuck that. I'm not going to get a dog. I'm not one of these people who needs it. And now I have her. And I'm like, oh my God.
I had a Bubba Marie.
Yeah. What's that?
Bubba Marie was my first dog and she was a runt. And she was so sick, but like she was this cute little puppy and I put her in my lap, but she fucking bit everybody.
Yeah.
She bit everybody but me. She put her lap here, head right here, like until she was 13. And like my mom would come bitter and she was awful.
Yeah. But if it's a service dog, they can be as awful as they want. Yeah.
It's my baby.
She flies with me everywhere. She'll go on tour with me next week. She's it changes everything. Because I'm in hotel rooms every weekend and I wake up every time. I don't know what trauma this is, but I wake up and I'm like, who took me? Where am I?
Yeah.
I've been kidnapped. Yeah. This isn't my house. Yeah. And now I just wake up, her head's right here. And I'm like, what's up, bitch? You know?
That's what I need.
Yeah, it helps so much. And she's like, let's go for a little walk. And you're like, all right, I can do a walk. Like, she helps me take care of myself, you know? It's the best. So I highly recommend that.
I love it.
But yeah, I it is the tenacity of... So then Louis gave you the money for the fight, money to train, right?
Mm-hmm. He sponsored me, totally.
Yeah. Is that what it is? He sponsored you.
He sponsored me for the fight with some money. And then I was like, what can I do in exchange? And he was like, well, just pick your favorite charity and do something nice for him. And I've been working with this charity, Give a Kid a Dream, for like the whole time I was at Gleason's. Take inner city kids from off the streets and teach them the disciplines of like through boxing. I say it all the time, boxing saves more lives than it takes. And I have kids in there that I've known for 10, 12 years that used to come after school that are now parents. And
whoa, that's so cool. That kid who I saw on your Instagram video punching, was that one of those kids?
Probably. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So he is the brother of one of the kids. And that kind of like leaded into this problem. When I retired, a lot of these kids who left, like I would let them come back to the gym, teach them for free, maybe cover their gym memberships. And I would always tell them, like, you know, the porch light's on. But, you know, never not come home.
Yeah.
And whenever they need something, they would come home. And I was doing this interview with somebody and they were asking about it. And I was just like crying about the boys. Like I had to tell them, you know, the porch light's off for a little bit. And, you know, like, yeah. I mean, that was a real thing. Like the charity work that I do it suffers because now I can't afford the time or the energy for all this. And, you know, some people, really great people stepped up and we started the Porch Light Fund. And I have that Abdul that I have on my page. He's fully sponsored. So once my brain gets a little better, I know that I have that.
Porch Light Fund is yours?
Yeah. I imagine through brain damage, I started that.
Through brain damage, you started Porch Light Fund, which is for inner city kids.
Inner city kids. The idea that some kids need a little more time and that, you know, we send a lot of these kids out into the world when they're 18 and they haven't really mastered the disciplines of life yet. And a lot of these inner city kids don't have strong structures to go back to. And that's why they lean on Gleason's. And when I've been in there for the last 10 years, it's not just myself. There's Blimp. At any point you've been in there, you can see Blimp with 8 kids around him.
Yeah.
And he's feeding them all.
Yeah.
Or you can see Kat with 4 kids and they're, you know, maybe rolling reps or doing something. And it's because it's a community of giving back. For everyone at Gleason's like you who pays us, there's 8 who are in our office, you know?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
So the idea
that sweeping the floors and stuff.
The idea of the Porch Light Fund is like, all right, kid, come. You can help me with my girls for an hour, and then I'll give you a lesson, and then we'll get lunch. And those are things that when I got hurt, I couldn't do anymore. And one of the lawyers from the gym helped me start the charity and get it going so that when I'm stronger, I could put real energy into recruiting people.
And do you feel there yet or not quite yet?
I mean, I'm almost there. It's hard for me to think because the mistake I made with the charity is thinking, I can use my charity to help you. Come on. But that's not how you help people. You can't tell people they need help. You got to wait for people to come to you.
Okay, so you're worried that if you raise money for it and get it prepared, that you won't have anybody taking it up.
You know, like more so to speak, like I would rather be able to put the energy into finding the kids who can benefit the most from it, right? Like there are certain things that... you know, a lot of these kids don't realize that are available to them, food stamps, to be on the housing lotteries. There are free programs for education that will help underprivileged adults in their 20s who maybe passed up on high school and changed their mind. And the Porch Light Fund is aimed to help people like that who come to the gym thinking that boxing is their only way out when boxing could genuinely just be a hobby for them. But we can help you. You know, because they learned the discipline of life through boxing, sacrifice, commitment, hard work, dedication.
Right. It doesn't need to be their means to an end.
Yeah, but you don't really learn that on the street. It's a different code. It's this different shit.
So there's no program for people who are athletes who got hurt that you can access?
Would you imagine not in boxing because we signed the contract. So everybody's like, you waived your liability. And if I was a regular, I'd be like, oh, yeah, maybe I did. But I did too much shit first, which means that me having brain damage is the first girl that got this shit too. So let's get it together.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? Let's get it together.
Because you were the first MSG.
Female. I was the first female I ever signed to a long-term promotional contract by Lou DiBella. I was the first female to box at the Barclays Center. First athlete to ever be promoted in two sports. I went from boxing and Bellator and back promotional-wise, like active in both.
Boxing, MMA.
Boxing and MMA. I was the first athlete to do that shit.
Yeah.
Like, that's bananas. And I didn't do it on some little show like, you know, what's his name? You know, on them little MMA shows. I can't even think of the comedian's name. The fat guy, Kevin something.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah.
It wasn't some little bum-ass show. Like, I did my Bellator debut. It was their first fight in New York City. It was the first, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, why?
Did that pay bad?
I got $20,000 for it, which is more than I made for my world title fight.
It's so crazy. I made $20,000 last weekend performing for 4 hours.
And I got brain damage.
And you got brain damage.
And they're like, you signed up for it. I warned you. Imagine.
What about the, oh my God, it's so crazy. What about like any, did you go to sponsors and say like, besides Everlast, did you go to other people?
People don't care about women's boxing because of the fact that it's called women's boxing. There's like, you know, it's the most bizarre thing. It's this idea that, you know, like when they say if you have a bad boyfriend, he doesn't have to lie to you. You lie to yourself.
Yeah.
And that's how boxing is. It never had to lie to me. I lied to myself. Women's boxing doesn't sell. Bullshit.
Yeah.
I just found all those people's seats. That's the only reason I'm here, stupid.
Yeah.
But I showed them that women will work twice as hard for half as much money. And I did a lot of stupid things like signed contracts, accepted less money, just thinking, this door never been opened before. Let me just open it.
Let me open it.
See what happens.
Yeah, and you took the consequence. I mean, you took the hit for so many other women getting
into
it.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it ain't right. I know I'm not the best. I ain't gonna sit here and say I'm the best. And I didn't open the door for any of them Olympians. Like, them girls fought their own fight. You know, yeah. Clarissa Shields, Katie Taylor, them girls fought their own fight. Walked hard walks. They were not wanted when they walked their walk to be, you know, in the Olympic trials and through everything, the media, the press, everyone was so hard on them. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about I made a way for the B-side, the girl who didn't have an Olympic pedigree. You know what I mean? And there ain't one champion who didn't come up through the Olympics because them Olympics girls, most of them was like, man, like there was one girl who did an interview was like, I don't know why Heather Hardy's fighting her. Like, bitch, mind your business.
Fuck, what do you mean? Because it's two separate things?
Because I'm not that good as them. Because I don't punch right. Because I'm just I'm an Arturo Gatti.
Yeah.
I'm not technical. I'm not pretty boxing. You put me in a fucking hole.
And I claw your way out.
I dare you. I dare you to put somebody in there with me.
So Serrano is more Olympic.
Oh my God, she's the best puncher in
okay, so there's
she's never been to the Olympics, but what Amanda did, because she started before me, before the women were allowed to box in the Olympics.
Yeah.
When Amanda was a pro, they didn't let girls box in the Olympics.
When did they start?
2012.
Whoa.
Women's boxing is still in its infancy. Do you know that in 1997, girls weren't even allowed to spar in gyms? That Bruce used to have to open Gleason's at night so that the girls could come in when the gym was closed and do the sparring after hours.
Wait, well then when did they get on TV?
It was in the late 90s.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that girls could even box in the Golden Gloves or do any of that stuff. And that's, I think, crazy. It was the early 2000s when women could compete internationally and do like that kind of travel. Boxing is the oldest sport in the Olympics, and it was 2012 before women were allowed to participate.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So then, and it's two separate leagues. Like there's...
It's bizarre because it's the only sport where it's not like tennis or like track where you have the men's side and the girls' side. This is a sport where the venue and the revenue is shared. So you have a fight promoter put on a fight card and they'll go, okay, we have 8 spots. We can put any boxer on these spots. And then they decide We're going to make that one for the girl because we could save money there. Because essentially, as much as they'll say women's boxing doesn't sell, each promoter financially supports an entire card. They decide who gets the money. Oh, they distribute the money. The fans don't.
It's so not a promoter like would be like, here's a show. I'm going to set up all of these people. Yeah. Men. Here's a woman's fight. We won't pay them as much, obviously.
Right. But they'll go, watch this. We're going to put this girl on because that bitch got like fucking 600,000 followers on Instagram. The whole planet's going to be talking about it. She's going to sell fights. We're going to pay her like 50 grand because they don't know any better. They were getting $5,000 10 years ago. Shh.
Yeah.
And now the girls are walking around with their fancy shoes and bags like,
Yeah. Not knowing that the men are making double.
No, they know.
We do.
We all know.
Yeah.
Maybe these girls be getting sponsorships and other shit, or they'd be like, oh, Heather, don't know. You know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, I'm not talking about up there.
Yeah.
Because the ones up there are this big.
Yeah.
Feel me?
Totally.
This is this.
Yeah. Comedy is the same way. Comedy is the same way. There's like three women that
are making
incredible
money.
And then
you'll have someone like fucking, like, I don't know, who's the funniest woman ever, who'll be like, that's not true. And you're like, I'm not talking to you.
Right. Yeah, we're in a completely different league.
This isn't for you.
Yeah. That's like how my super hot friends are when they talk about stuff. I'm like, you don't get to tell me what it's like being a woman.
It's like how I feel when I'm like, you know, oh my God, I haven't eaten. And then like everyone in the room is like,
Yeah.
You know, totally. I get it. I deserve that.
So then, but okay, so the Olympic, are there like beef between the league of boxers that you're in, which is, what is that called? Like if there's the Olympic pedigree ones and then
so
there's...
So the Olympic boxers are the amateurs. It's just USA Boxing is amateur boxing. They wear headgear. They compete just like you would compete in your first fight. You're going to get a book that's going to document every fight that you ever have as an amateur. So, like, I have mine, and it's got, like, my 30 in it. And then you have some people.
Really?
Because that's how long.
Yeah.
That they've been fighting every fight that they've ever fought. So the amateurs, the Olympics is just the final level for amateurs. And anyone can be a pro. Like, if you were like, I want to do a pro fight, anybody could do it.
So what have you fought?
I fought amateur, and I won every title as an amateur. Golden Gloves, Nationals, Regionals, Metros. I've won like a bunch of kickboxing titles, and then I turned pro, and I won some international titles, and then I won the WBO world title.
So, whoa, that's the world champion title.
Yeah, that's the big one.
Where was that?
Madison Square Garden on HBO.
Oh,
I beat the
HBO.
Spiky hair girl for it.
Oh yeah, that's
that bitch done painted a fucking mustache and she painted it on like for ha-has. It wasn't like a thing. Like she was like, I'm gonna show him.
Wow.
just for press, you know, like it wasn't a thing in 2017.
Right. Yeah.
It just was for press. That's the type of shit we were doing.
Were you dealing with like male promoters being creepy?
No, because I'm so vicious.
Yeah.
You know, there's no properly talk to me. You see me in the gym. Could you imagine someone coming over and asking me for dinner at the gym?
No. Not in your Tims that you wear at the gym.
Right? I'm very attractive, but people don't ask me on dates. They don't even
So you didn't deal with
it.
Any of that shit?
There was one, and I never talked about it before, but I really don't fucking care.
Yeah, fuck
the guy who owns I remember was like, oh, you know, we never sponsored any females. And I knew it was some bullshit, but he was like, oh, you can meet me in my hotel room and we'll ink it out. And I was like, yeah, that's going to be a no for me, dog.
Meet me at the hotel is a classic.
I know. It's like, bleh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where you're just trapped. Know. So, okay, cool. So you don't have to deal with that. That's very much in women's comedy where we do have to deal with a lot of that shit.
Yeah, but I'm a fighter. Like, I literally will, I will break your mouth.
Yeah.
You know.
And then, you didn't have to deal with that. You have to deal with very little pay. And then, and it sounds so similar in comedy in the sense that once you break through the certain echelon, it's oodles of money, right?
But gosh, yeah.
But you have to get past that point, and there's probably space for that for like two women.
And that's what it is, like, right? Like, and it's interesting you say that because I'm sure it's like that in comedy.
Yeah.
There was a time when Ronda Rousey and I were both in the paper at the same time. And Ronda was making millions in the UFC, but boxing wasn't giving me any attention. They would literally write articles in the New York Post and the New York Times about us. And at that level, it could be like, well, it wasn't an Instagram post. It was actually the fucking Times. Like, there's a valid argument there that this woman is making a ton of money, and I got holes in my running shoes.
Yeah.
That shit don't make no sense to me.
And what is it? What's the reasoning for it?
Because they can. Right? Because like, it's the same thing with comedy. Like, it's just a male, you know, oriented industry that they can say whatever they want. Like, literally call them, women's boxing doesn't sell. You liar! Yeah. That is a lie!
Well, they also do a big thing that they love to do in comedy is they go, we'll put you on late night. Like, I did late night, no hotel room.
Yeah, I never got a paid car service anywhere, nothing.
I'm like, I'm on TV. Can I have a couch?
Yeah.
And they're like, no, it's good exposure. The word exposure is used constantly. Like, and I'm dealing with it right now with like pitching specials to networks and stuff. And they do this thing where they hold you and they go, maybe. And I'm at the point where I'm like, fuck you. Yeah. I'm not doing this, like, you rolling me over and making me feel like I need this by creating anticipation.
They want to see how much work you'll do before they commit that they don't have to do.
Yeah.
Right? It's like the idea that, all right, if you sell $10,000 worth of tickets, then you can have the show.
Yeah.
So, because they know I'm going to be hot. They're going to get done. They had to do it anyway, but we'll just make you do it.
And it's such a faceless... It's such a faceless thing. I mean, even the fact that you get brain damage and you're asking for money and the way that you talk about it is you're like Everlast. It is like this whole sweeping, or the way we talk about it with like Netflix, right? But then you like meet the person there. It's just that when you're able to hide under such a massive umbrella.
Yeah. The idea of being able to, it's like disconnect or dissociate fact that I'm a person. Like sometimes I have to be like, you know I'm Annie's mom, right? Like, do you want me to see my C-section? Like, I have a child came out of my body. Like, I have to tell them, like, I don't know if you know this, but from here to here, I can't feel anything.
Yeah, it's really interesting. We have...
I don't have any feeling left. Like, I have skin. This is my body, and you're talking to me like I'm just a pen that signed the contract.
When I was dealing with late night stuff, I remember hitting them up and then being like, sorry, you have to wait a week. Sorry, we're putting somebody else in. And I emailed the guy back and I was like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to keep living not knowing when I'm going to have to fly to LA. And they were like, okay, you can come now. And I was like, all I had to do was stand up for myself for a second. I mean, that's crazy. And it took everything in me. Like, I want to be like, don't you know that these are like, in comedy, I'm like, don't you know that these are kids who are like, you know, especially for these big festivals and you know, 5-minute spots on TV, I'm like, we have everything hanging on this.
Oh, God, I know.
Just think about me as like a person at home anxiously waiting your email. Mm-hmm. Like, don't. And I think it's very easy to just dehumanize people when you're hiding under such a massive.
Or when your livelihood depends on it. You've convinced yourself that I'm not a person, right? Like when I hear these things, right? Like in comedy, you know, it's your livelihood. In boxing, people are literally taking their feet and kicking me. Like a girl took her shin and like kicked my nose and it went like this and like this. There's a picture of me with a hole in my nose.
Oh my God.
There is. It's a picture of me with a hole in my nose and I was going like this. And you could see chunks of bone coming out of my mouth in the photo.
How did your face look fine now?
You could see it. I have a scar over here. The hole was from the elbow. And I remember going to the corner and being like, that bitch punches hard. I think something's in her gloves. And I had a coach going, it's her elbow, stupid. And I said, well, you didn't show me that. Fuck do I do about an elbow? And he was like, stay away. But it was just like,
are you allowed to throw elbows?
What? In MMA, you're allowed. Oh. In boxing, you punch. But this bitch was like, fucking elbow me. I'm like, I need you, big, bit tall ass girl. And then the ref was going to stop it. He was like, Kelly, you got a little. And I was like, no, I'm all right. It was the same like the Amanda fight. It was my MMA fight, my pro debut at Madison Square Garden. No. It was my second MMA fight, Christina Williams. And the ref was going to stop it. Please, one more round. And he's all right, one more round. Anything happens, it's a wrap. And that was when I went to the corner. They told me about the elbows. And I went back out there and I thought I was doing all right, move around. I bobbed when I should have weaved right into a roundhouse kick.
Oh!
Her dirty bare feet and everything. Brah! Like that one, boom, right in the nose. And I mean, there is one picture of me just standing there. Like I looked at the ref and like, and I just exhaled and like all these bones were coming because they, you know, that shit is all connected.
Oh it my.
All.
How right. did it heal? It just healed itself? You put a thing around it?
No, I had to go to the hospital. I had to get my nose reset and stuff. But I remember I was in Connecticut and I was at the hospital and I remember I had to FaceTime my daughter because I had all sorts of, it was like this on my face, like this on my nose, I had stuff over here. And I had to say, like, mommy, going to show you the FaceTime. We got ugly marks, but I'm all right. It's going to be scary. We did like the slow reveal. And then I show my face and she's like, ah, you're hideous, you know.
Oh my, how old is she?
27. She had to be like 15, like 14, oh my gosh. 6, like high school age.
Yeah.
You know, but we would do that little, mommy's got a headache again.
Oh my God. And then you just had to rest and ice and.
And that was it. Like
how many concussions do you think you've had?
Probably over 300.
No way.
Yeah, I probably had the equivalent of 300 car accidents in my life.
Do you have headaches?
Yeah.
All the time?
Yeah, a lot.
Wow. And weed helps?
So, weed help. I mean, the worst part isn't even the headaches. My vision be like sometimes like this.
Yeah.
Like through a paper towel holder. Now I could see pretty good, but if I spend too much time outside, it's like I can't see from here down. So I'm walking like boom into shit, boom into shit, boom into, you know, like I can't see nothing. And the shit is embarrassing because I'm a world champion.
Yeah.
And I'm walking around the gym like, you know, my glasses are sideways.
And yeah. So, have you met anybody else who's had this stuff happen?
So Raul Frank is a trainer at Gleason's. Maybe you know him. He's the only reason I mention him is office right next to mine. And he talked to me a little bit about, he fought. I'll never remember the guy's name, but big world champion where he had this concussion thing. And it took him, like he said, almost a year and his vision went back. So the doctor said that it shouldn't get worse, but it could improve if I take it easy.
But is there anybody who's been through this where they got brain damage in a fight or injured in a fight, couldn't fight? And then is there any like...
There's a guy who's from 29 years ago. He fought... I might cry, and I really didn't want to do that. And this guy fought. He fought like 29 years ago in the UK. I think Nigel Benny fought. But he got knocked out. And his sister actually called me because he was in a coma for a while. And he also had this swelling around the optical nerve. And he went blind. So his condition is what would have happened to me had my condition gotten any worse, right? It was a lot of very similar symptoms. It was the, he like, you know, there's a laundry list of them that were the same, but they were very terrifying. He's currently in a home and doing better, but it's been 29 years.
It's been 29 years. Is he being supported though?
Yeah. His sister, I mean, I know I can't say much else on the subject. I've only had one phone call with her, but I only talk on it because, you know, she reached out to me. She wanted to get me help with his doctor, but that would have required me, like, you know, putting pressure on the boxing commission to pay for it. And I would much rather just tell them that they were pieces of shit instead of saying, you should pay for this. Because really, it's not a matter of what you should pay for. It's a matter of humanity. How could you look Heather Hardy in the face and not see a person?
Just, yeah.
You know? And there are millions of people in the world who are like, fuck that bitch. What'd she do? Nothing. I'm not talking to y'all. I'm talking to like four people.
And particularly at Everlast, because they sponsored you for so long.
I mean, Everlast, my promoters, you know, any of the promoters I ever fought for who I had a relationship with, I won't say them by name because I really don't feel like getting phone calls from their family. You know what I mean? Because you know that's what happens when you're on TV. Like, why'd you say that about him? That's not even nice. You know? But it's like, there are certain people where it's not like, of course you don't legally owe me anything. But, you know, you're not feeling like you need to help me get to work.
Yeah.
Give me a hand. Like, I literally was calling these promoters, like, begging them for work. And one of the promoters who I owed some money to was like, I'll tell you what. He told everyone else that he cleared my debt, but he told me that he was gonna put me on retainer, And he hired me to work two jobs this summer. And I'm thinking, like, the retainer thing was just bullshit. He's going to send me money. No. Brain damage, nothing. He sent me a little bit of weed. But brain damaged, working two shows, matching fights and making a million fucking phone calls, thinking I'm going to get someone. It's like, guys, I'm begging you. I asked a couple promoters, like, I said, you guys got fat. Maybe you want to come in for some boxing training. Like, I'm hungry. I need help.
Yeah.
And now I had to try. One person's office said to me, try teaching richer clients in Manhattan instead of at Gleason's. And that was going to be, I guess, my retirement plan after being the first lady of Brooklyn Boxing. That shit is whack.
It's crazy. Yeah. So, and then, and I mean, I'm thinking about Everlast because it's everywhere. It's all over Gleason's. It's all over people's bodies.
It's disappointing, right?
It's a giant corporation. Yeah. I mean, a fraction of that money could help you.
You know, like I called them last year. I have an office at Gleason's gym. Hector Roca, I talked to you about Papa when he died, and we had the whole beautiful thing with Bruce. Bruce gave me his office. And when I had sponsored, you know, I had a sponsor for my Amanda fight. I had a sponsor for the fight. I lost the Amanda fight. I lost the sponsor. Normal, regular stuff, you lose. And I'd reach out to Everlast to even ask them, will you sponsor my office? I don't want any money from me. Will you at least pay Bruce so that I don't feel bad asking Bruce for favors, right?
Yeah.
I could say, if my office is paid for, I could say to Bruce, okay, if I let this client in for free, you know, teach a class, but I owe him all this money. And they wouldn't even do that.
Yeah.
Bruce is the only one. Bruce said, baby, you don't owe me a penny. I'm not letting you go nowhere. We're gonna figure this out.
Wow.
Yeah, only Bruce did that. Everybody else was like, I'm very sorry, but I am not legally responsible to help you.
Yeah, nobody's legally responsible.
Fuck you then.
Wow. Yeah, I do. It is. I've had moments where like people have reached out. You know, like I have. There's people I've employed who've been like, I went through this thing. Can you? I had like a fan reach out and was like, can you send me $100?
God, you can't do that.
And I was like, I felt myself just being like, oh my. And I was like spinning out about this guy. And I was like, maybe I should send them the money. And it took my friend being like, what are you doing? No. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it is. But it was like, I can't imagine somebody that I've like actually known. And yeah, it is crazy. I mean, it's also just. I think that also is one of the problems with the way that I think the way that we deal with like even like charity or philanthropy and stuff, where I think that companies will be like, well, because I give this amount of money to this, I don't actually have to. Yeah.
And it stems so much from unequal pay. Like equal pay is a real thing. Like all this shit that you're suffering to be a comedian, all these risks you're taking for you to not make as much money as the boys, it's like crazy.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with me. You know, let me cry in my mansion like Sean Porter, right?
Yeah.
Sean Porter has brain damage. God forbid, I would never say that. But you know, like if somebody of his caliber that made that kind of money, God forbid, you know, then they'll be like, maybe they could get their MRIs and their health insurance and they don't got to worry about if they got to juggle between taking an Uber and taking a city bike to work. That's really what it came down to. People say like, oh, you made all this money to fight Amanda. First of all, when I left Texas, out of a $100,000 check, by the time you pay the corner, all the thing, I left that fight with like $65,000. And when you think of it, with a kid in college, SUNY Albany, all of the debt that I had, all of the debt that I was just, well, I'm going to fight Amanda, you know. And then I was sick. So September, October, November, it was so hard to go back to work. And then, like, I had a boyfriend who wasn't working. So everyone was like, oh, she's just in a bad relationship. It's like, oh, I have brain damage.
You had a boyfriend through the brain damage?
Yeah.
And then did you break up after it got better?
Well, it never got better.
Or the relationship? Or
just
the brain?
Anything.
Yeah.
You know, that's still, yeah.
And then,
I mean, I'm just like in the space where my health is so important. And like my health is so fucking important. Like you can't pour from an empty cup, right? If I die, my ex-husband is as dumb as a bag of rocks. I am not leaving him in charge of my daughter. It's like not even an option.
Oh, you were married to her dad?
Her father.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he is so far in the past. But the thought, like I'm responsible for this beautiful child. Like my health is important. Like, yeah, I loved my boyfriend. He threw temper tantrums and whatever, but I can't fucking deal with that right now.
Yeah.
I don't want to deal with anything else right now. Like, I need a doctor. And boxing, how dare you leave me waiting for one?
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, especially how much they got from you. It is, but it's also like there isn't one place you can go to. That's a weird thing too. There isn't one.
Because nobody wants to talk about it. Because in order to say that we're going to start an organization to help fighters get brain damage, they have to admit that they're making money trading people's lives.
Right.
Because that's the underlying thing. When you have these phone calls about matching fights, they're not saying, well, listen, I'll put Heather on the second slot and then we'll put Mark on the fourth slot. And then they'll be like, no, I got this fucking guy. And if you don't put him in there, I'm going to trade him for this one. And then this one will get this. You understand? Like, it's trafficking. It's people trafficking. It's okay. He can take this loss, but I'll give you somebody to win in that slot if you give me a girl to lose in this slot. People trade you like you're nothing. So to
they
say,
they assume that some people will lose too.
Oh my God. I went into the Amanda fight as the loser. I knew I was going to lose. That's how boxing goes. If you're not the promoter's girl, you know what I mean? Like the chances of you winning are so slim. You could always knock somebody out or be so fantastic that you win. But, you know, we're talking 90% of boxing. You got an A side and a B side. The one who's going to win and then the one who's going to lose.
Oh, the one who's going to, how do you guys know? And then you just train to try and be the A side?
The promoter, whoever's the promoter. So the promoter's the guy who runs the show. And then he'll be like, he has fighters signed. If you're signed to a promoter, he'll be like, all right, I got to get Heather a fight. You know, on a contract, I got to get Heather a fight. I'm going to put on the show and we'll give her an opponent. So you understand? The opponent. That's not a body. That's not a life. That's not a brain. That person don't have a name. That's always just going to be Heather's opponent. So they don't care if you win, if you lose. You're just coming in to be Heather's opponent. The same way I would go in to be this one's opponent or that one's
opponent. So you were Amanda's opponent because it was her show, basically.
Yeah. She. I was gifted the opportunity for that fight. She said, that's when everybody was like, oh, why is she doing this fight? She don't need to be doing this fight. Nah, Amanda was like, come on, baby girl, let me get you some money.
Brought you in.
Yeah, that came from her heart. That was soul. That was friendship. That was like, you need one before you retire. But I got hurt. And then the money wasn't there. I got sick. I was like, fuck it, I need another one. And that's when the bare knuckle came.
Wow. So there just should be something set up. So it's like, whoever loses this fight makes money. Whoever wins this fight makes money. And the if there is something that makes them no longer able to, there should be something.
Something if you
insurance.
Get, like, you know what they say with Affleck, if you get hurt and miss work, it don't hurt to miss work.
Yeah.
They ain't none of that shit for us because it hurt when I missed work.
Yeah.
It hurt.
And now with training, you can't train for all hours of the day. You can't do that.
No, because I can't let my heart rate get up. Yeah. So, like, and then when I'm around a lot of people, like, imagine I don't have peripheral vision good and lots of, like, lights fuck with me. So sometimes you would see me at the gym with the sunglasses on.
Yeah.
Or I'd be, like, walking into shit. That's when you know it's like, gosh, she got here early. She's gonna go home.
It'd be cool if you taught kids, like, young kids.
I'm working on classes for after school.
Because after school saved my life 1,000%. My family was working all the time, and they threw me into after school, and it was like, where I learned everything.
Yeah.
And it seems like that would be a crossover. And isn't classes just more lucrative? Can you do that? Then?
Yeah, but it's hard because Gleason's is really set up to be independent training. There's no real, like, classroom.
Yeah.
You know? And when you think about kids, it's like, I mean, you've heard some of the things walking into the
locker
room.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah.
But yeah, you also don't charge enough. You should charge more. Women should pay more.
It's
women.
So funny because I saw Sid today and I told one of my girls, I was like, I'm mad at her for no reason. Like, I feel like I hate her. And my girl was like, why? I'm like, this bitch charges more than me. And I do not,
you don't charge enough.
I was like, I don't agree with her.
Yeah.
And my client was like, well, I've been telling you charge more.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I'm going to talk to Sid because I'm not happy.
Yeah. You got to charge
more.
She
got to tell me how to do this shit.
Yeah. I think you got to charge more. You charge men more, which I love.
Yeah.
You thought I was a man when I showed up and you were like, you charged me. And then the next day you were like, oh, you're a woman. Yeah, you don't have to pay that much, which is great.
That's true. I used to teach a free women's class on Sundays and I would charge men $100 if they came.
That's awesome.
Because
they get $100 to look.
Yeah, because equal pay, you know, if you think about one free women's class a week, it backs up your training.
Right.
You could train with your trainer and then you budget for 5 days, one free class, you know?
Yeah.
But I would charge the men $100 so that I would get paid and everybody win. All the women win.
All the women win. That should be the theme of the... Oh my God, we're at 124 minutes.
Because I forgot I'm on the show. I'm gonna watch this. I'm gonna watch this and be mortified at my fucking responses because I forgot we were talking on TV.
Oh my God, that's crazy. I had no idea we've been going that long. That's insane. Okay, let me think if I have any last important questions.
I haven't talked to someone for 2 hours in like probably 15 years.
That's crazy. The main thing that I have learned from you is that you get back up even though whatever happens.
Yeah.
Because even though, you know, I mean, I know that it even just the sense of like I met you, I felt that whole week I told you this that I went through a breakup and then I was training with you and you were very just like, you know, hitting me with the noodles and being like, don't flinch. Just be like, fuck you, bitch. You know, and like really within only 3 sessions, I kind of got this mentality that you were giving me of like, don't let somebody else hurt you.
Because this is so important that feelings aren't facts.
Yeah.
And when I was able to separate feelings from facts, I realized this is some bullshit we're on. When you look at somebody who'll say, like, I did so much for you, Heather. How could you say that about me? You know, that's true. You did do so much about, but it doesn't negate my truth.
Right.
Right. It got to the point where I have to speak my truth and not be embarrassed of how it makes anyone feel.
Yeah.
How it makes anyone look, because it's like we're at my health point. Right. It took me having brain damage to start creating boundaries. And now, I mean, I'm impenetrable. I don't know that anyone will ever hurt my feelings again.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
And it's, yeah, I mean, I'm glad that you're saying it out loud. I'm glad that you're willing to do this podcast. Don't buy Everlast stuff. Fuck Everlast. Everlast pay up.
Yeah, that's...
It's just so fucked up. It's so crazy.
It's bananas.
It's a fraction of their money that they could send you and be like, thank you for being the heat.
And they were paying me like $1,000 a month. It's not like they were paying me $30,000, right? Like they were paying me $12,000 a year, $1,000 a month. And when they cut me off, I was starving.
Yeah.
So just imagine that level of world champion from Everlast. That, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It don't make no sense.
World champion female boxer.
On Women's History Month every year. Heather Hardy, the pioneer. You bitches.
That's crazy. Yeah. And it's just there isn't one place to go and be like, pay up. You got this from me. It's
right.
Just an amalgamation of people who have milked from the fucking...
We should go, all right, you know what? I did have someone call me and offer to pay for a therapist, which is fantastic because, you know, all this shit with CTE, like, you never know. Like, I don't, you know, they're afraid I'm going to turn into Aaron Hernandez.
They offered to pay for a therapist? What, was that from one of a sponsor or something? Or just a friend?
Well, I called the medical commission sobbing. Like, I couldn't even catch my breath.
Really?
And, they called me back and put me in touch with someone from Connecticut, the Connecticut. And one of the old commissioners is going to pay out of pocket for me.
Hell yeah. That's great.
Right? Like, somebody's like, let's help Heather.
And then how can we, what can we do? We can say... Hit you up to do classes.
Yeah, I'm teaching clients at Gleason, so I would love to. Because I'm not like a lot of people have said, like start a GoFundMe, and I won't touch the money.
You won't touch it.
I won't touch a GoFundMe money because my whole career, in order to sell women's boxing, my fans bought my tickets.
Yeah.
So it was really my fans paying my salary and paying for them, right? Like, because I always sold more tickets than I fought. So the thought of all my girls and all my fans giving up their coffee money for me to get to work easy just makes me sick. It's not right. Everlast should, you know, even Bruce, you know, Bruce should be compensated for having to take care of me being in brain damage every morning. Come on, Heather, come on. You know, he'd sit me down on the little seat. It's okay, we're going to do that, right? Like, Bruce should be compensated too. It sucks.
It sucks. He probably doesn't need to be compensated. I imagine just spending time with you is a blast. He probably feels lucky to do it, but fuck Everlast. And thank you for doing this so much.
Do you have
any last words of wisdom?
This is great.
Okay, good.
Are we going to train again?
We are training again.
Cool.
Hell yeah, we're training again.
We got to get Louis in.
Oh, we got to get Louis in.
So I will say this now. I'm putting him on He promised me a steak dinner after my Amanda fight.
Oh, yeah, that's
so
right.
So now I want you to come.
I'm with interest.
So this is with interest. So steak dinner. And it would be nice. We should do like a boxing session and then make him buy us dinner.
That would be great. Yeah. I would love that. We'll get him in there. I used to make fun of him because he would shadow box before going on stage.
Really?
And I always thought it was so cringy. And now that I've been boxing, I do it every single time.
You can't help it.
It's so fun.
I met him because I was on his show and I beat the shit out of him. That was my character.
It was in Louis?
Yeah. It was on the Louis show. We were on 7th Avenue and we had an argument on the bus stop. And he was like, I'm not going to give you lines. Let's just make it like we're fighting. And then you have to chase me and tackle me. And we did like two takes of it.
It was in the show?
It was in the show.
I need to look it up. Yeah. Oh my God, that's incredible.
I beat
incredible.
Him up. I tackled him on 7th Avenue. I was hitting him, kicking him.
Hell yeah. Yeah, that's great. Dope. Oh my God, I would love to beat up Louie.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much for doing this. And yeah, I'll see you at the gym.
Yes.
Okay, cool.